And welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Tuesday, July 21st. I'm your reader, Kathleen Jesperson. Front page story today, Cedar Rapids plans twice a week classes for high schoolers. This story by Grace King for the Gazette. High school students in the Cedar Rapids Community School District will attend in-person classes only 2 days a week this fall and take classes online 3 days a week, the district announced Monday during a community session. Students will be split into two groups by the first letter of their last name. Students with last names beginning with A to M will be in Cohort 1, and students with a last name beginning with N to Z will be in Cohort 2. Classes will be offered in a block schedule. Students can take up to 4 classes a day for 90-minute sessions each, rather than more classes a day for 50-minute sessions. Cohort 1 will do in-person learning on Mondays and Tuesdays, and online learning Wednesdays and Thursdays. Cohort 2 will do online learning Mondays and Tuesdays, and in-person Wednesdays and Thursdays. Both groups will learn online on Fridays. This meets the state's newly announced requirement for 50% capacity in the school building, classrooms, and lunchroom. All students will be required to wear a face mask, which will be provided by the district. The proposed schedule is flexible and allows for classes to go completely online if necessary. All students with individualized education plans, or IEPs, will have a remote learning plan created for them between August 1 and the first day of school. These plans will be created on a student-by-student basis. We will be working through individual situations and individual classroom situations to make the best plan possible for your child, said Wendy Parker, Executive Director of Special Services. More than 2,300 students in the Cedar Rapids Community School District have IEPs. Families will be able to choose virtual or face-to-face learning as any other students in the district, Parker said. There will be no daily temperature checks before students get on a bus or enter a school building, according to the plan. Health Services Manager Sandy Byard said it would take hours to check students' temperatures as they walk into the building, and research shows 35% to 40% of people with coronavirus never have a fever. Attempts to mitigate the virus will be done by wearing masks and face shields and keeping students at least 6 feet apart when possible, Byard said. The expectation for staff and students is they check their temperatures at home and stay home when they're sick or have other symptoms of COVID-19, like a cough. Pre-kindergarten through 12th grade students will have one-to-one technology this year. All students from first grade to 12th grade will be issued a Chromebook. Pre-K and kindergartners will be given iPads. More than 350 internet hotspots are available to high schoolers, and the same number are ready for middle schoolers, while 1,500 hotspots are available to elementary students. The district last week announced plans for elementary and middle school students to be in the classroom 5 days a week. Middle school students will be assigned an advisory teacher. Each advisory cohort would remain together to limit contact between students. Teachers can rotate in no less than 3 week increments to provide students exposure to different subject teachers. The goal is for the student-to-teacher ratio to be 20 to 1. Under the plan, all district staff members would be provided masks and shields. Elementary school students would be given face shields, and middle and high school students would be provided face masks. In another front page story, Louisiana family makes the trek to the UI Children's Hospital. Specialist brings hope to town. As she prepared to take down the Mickey Mouse bed of a little boy she and her husband had just let go, Tammy Mock, 5 years ago, fell to her knees, holding his blanket, and felt crushed by the loss that might be familiar to many foster parents. A child going back home, if it's not always in the best interest for the child, is devastating, Mock, 49, said. It's almost like a death in your family, because we had had him for so long, and I was just in his room, just praying. It was in those moments, in that sand-colored bedroom of her West Central Louisiana home, that Mock found herself thinking of another child needing a family, her family. Within days, Mock would receive a call. They asked, "Hey, are you willing to take a little girl? She has very special medical needs. She has a trach," Mock recalled. Dr. Sohit Kanatra, a pediatric otolaryngologist now with the University of Iowa Healthcare, was in New Orleans in 2015 and cared for a battered baby, abused since birth, who had developed blood clots in the brain and challenged breathing. The infant was placed on a ventilator, but the breathing tube created such severe scarring that her windpipe narrowed to the size of a pinpoint. Kanatra and his team did a tracheotomy, making a hole in her tiny windpipe that allowed her to bypass the narrowing and breathe through a tube. "That's how I saw her for the first time," Kanatra told the Gazette, noting, for context, how pediatric trach tubes typically pose huge life quality issues for kids. "They cannot talk because they're breathing through their trach. They cannot go swimming, and the parents are always on edge. Their whole life essentially revolves around the plastic tube in their neck, so it's pretty intense." That was the intensity facing Mock and her husband in December of 2015 in deciding whether to bring into their home an infant with potentially lifelong injuries requiring constant care. But the baby's last name was Hope, Kiona Hope, and Mock said the baby radiated it, giving the family little pause in saying yes to the foster request. "I knew right away," she said, "and felt immediately that Kiona would be with them forever. I believe it was just love at first sight," Mock said. "I just felt in my heart she was ours." The adoption process wasn't simple. Kiona's biological father went to jail, but her mother did not, and Mock had to take Kiona for visits, creating stress and anxiety for the child. "Even at her young age, she would not stop crying," Mock said of Kiona's reaction to her biological mother. "We would always have to eventually wind back up at the doctor's office because her respiratory system would go completely out of sorts." The Mocks officially adopted Kiona on August 17, 2017, allowing them to focus on her health care needs, which are numerous, as Dr. Kanatra endeavored to free the toddler of the restrictive tube. As director of the pediatric airway program at the Children's Hospital New Orleans, Kanatra said his center was among only a few capable of performing the airway reconstruction he undertook on Kiona in December 2017. Using parts from her own rib cartilage, "The surgery was a great success," he said, and then she started talking for the first time, which is pretty moving for the family because they had never heard her voice. Kiona's first word was, "Hi." Then came "Mommy," "Eat," "Binky," "Blanky," and "Daddy," before she quickly jumped to complete sentences. Now, at age 4, Kiona loves to sing, among her favorite being "How Far I'll Go" from Moana and "You Are My Sunshine." "The overwhelming joy of hearing her voice makes me thank God every day," Mock told the Gazette. "We hardly ever tell her to be quiet." Although the operation freeing Kiona of the tube was 3 years ago, she still requires annual checks and follow-up operations, which is why the Louisiana family panicked upon learning Kanatra was moving in 2019 to Iowa City to take a position directing and expanding the pediatric airway program at the Stead Family Children's Hospital. "I was devastated. We were all devastated," Mock said. "We could not even think of him moving away from here. I just cried and cried." Once reality set in, Mock said, the family decided, "Okay, well, we're going with you. Wherever you go, we're going." True to the Mock's broad and ever-expanding definition of family, Kanatra became one of their clan. "There are no other doctors that we trust and in our mind are capable of taking care of her the way that he has taken care of her," Mock said. For the family's first trip to Iowa City, they coordinated travel through Miracle Flights, which provides free flights to families needing medical care outside their community. The Mocs would have used that organization again for their return visit this month, but the coronavirus pandemic grounded their flying plans. Considering Kiona's high-risk condition, the family decided to make the 16-hour drive with all their kids. They have the 5 in the house, but 10 total, including adult children who have moved out. And despite the hours and the challenge of avoiding public spaces on the road, Mock said they were overwhelmed by their care at UI's Children's Hospital. "I was blown away by how professional and yet interactive they were with Kiona," Mock said. "It was just so well organized and everything fell in place. It was like, wow." Thus, the family doesn't have qualms about continuing treks to see Kanatra in Iowa City as needed, though the doctor said they won't be necessarily forever. Because despite her many injuries as an infant, Kiona has caught back up with cognitive milestones for her age. "She is smart," Mock said. Kiona likes playing doctor. She has a stethoscope and band-aids and gives shots and does surgery on her dolls, suffering varying maladies. She's also kind. "She's full of life," Mock said. "She is the most caring, thoughtful, helpful little girl, always wanting to help someone. It's amazing, and I hope that we've played a part in that and showing her, hey, this is what family is, and this is what you do when you love someone." Also on the front page, this story from Brooklyn Drazy, YMCA closes site amid pandemic losses. As the COVID-19 pandemic continues to hurt its businesses, YMCA of Cedar Rapids Metro announced Monday it's closing the Mercy Health Plaza location that serves nearly 1,400 people a year. The closure will free up resources that can be allocated to branches better sustained by membership fees, said YMCA of the Cedar Rapids Metro Area President and CEO Bob Carlson. The location opened in 2013 under a partnership with Mercy Health. "The site isn't owned by the YMCA," Carlson said, "and since it's a smaller operation, the organization decided to pull back." The Cedar Rapids Metro YMCA Association collaborated with Mercy Health on the decision. "Our board has to look very closely at finances and making sure that we have the resources to carry on the YMCA operation," Carlson said. There are 4 other YMCA locations in the area, and the Helen G. Nassif, Marion, and Stony Point facilities open with limited hours and capacities. The Marion Independent Fitness Center, which is housed in the Marion Independent School District building, currently is closed, with the school district determining its hours. Carlson said most of the organization's part-time workers have been furloughed during the pandemic, with some returning to work as buildings have reopened. Full-time staff have been able to receive paychecks through the Paycheck Protection Program. He said the overall plan now is to offer Mercy Health Plaza location employees positions at different branches as they continue to reopen. The vast majority of YMCA programming has been canceled since March, and more than $1 million in revenue has been lost from summer program Camp Wapsie alone, a news release stated. That and losses from other memberships will take years to recover, Carlson said. We are in a very tough financial position. However, the regional YMCA facility plan for Marion still is on track, Carlson said, and is set to open in late December or early January. Ground was broken late last year for the facility at 3740 Irish Drive in Marion. The new YMCA planned to have 7,000 square feet of fitness and exercise space, a community room, a 6-lane lap pool, a warm water leisure pool, and a cafe, estimated at a cost of $20 million. As construction is funded by grants, donations, and fundraising, the project hasn't been stalled by the organization's financial situation. Right now, the YMCA of the Cedar Rapids metro area is focusing on its larger, more successful hubs that bring in more members, such as the Marion and downtown Cedar Rapids locations. Making sure these locations are successful will help the organization become healthier financially as the pandemic continues. We've been here 155 years in the community, and we want to keep that moving forward, Carlson said. Moving to the Iowa Today page, concerts to return to venues in Cedar Rapids. Music is returning to the U.S. Cellular Center and the McGrath Amphitheater with new safety protocols in place. Venue Works of Cedar Rapids, which manages these venues, as well as the Paramount Theater and I'm on Ice, calls its new plan Return to Live or Return to Live. All four venues have been closed since March. A weekly Live at the Five concert series featuring local bands will begin July 30th and continue through September 24 at the Cellular Center. The lineup includes Toxic Blonde on July 30th, New Trick on August 6th, Catfish Murphy on August 13th, Tanner Lee and the Beach Bums on August 20th, The Mixtape August 27th, Tyler Richton and the High Bank Boys on September 3rd, Not Quite Brothers, September 10, Faux Doubt, September 17, and Planapalooza, September 24. They will perform in a new Club 5 setup, using the tables to keep capacity around 400, down from the usual 2,000 Club 5 standing room only shows. Tickets will be $5 at the door, but reservations are encouraged at creventslive.com. Guests must wear face coverings when not at their table. Among other safety measures for events that require bag checks, only clear bags 8.5 by 5 inches or smaller will be permitted. Food and beverage operations have been upgraded to minimize contact between staff and patrons, and each venue has bought electrostatic cleaning equipment. We are excited to slowly and safely bring live events back to Cedar Rapids, Michael Silva, Executive Director of Venue Works Cedar Rapids, said in a statement. At the outdoor McGrath Amphitheater, tickets are for sale for Josh Turner on August 22nd, 8 p.m., Gary Allen on September 11, 8 p.m., and Pork Tornadoes, 7 p.m. September 25. New limits there are 1,339 audience members, down from 4,000. When full arena concerts return to the Cellular Center, capacity will be 1,806, down from about 6,000. At the Paramount Theater, limits will be set at 620, down from 1,675. I'm on Ice numbers will depend on the kind of presentation, noted Katie Ripka, Director of Marketing and Sales for VenueWorks. In Coralville, the 6,000-seat Extreme Arena is targeting its grand opening for early September, General Manager Jack Ligon said, adding that an official announcement will come soon. And also on the Iowa Today page, pandemic moves the annual CR Especially for You race online. For the first time ever, the Especially for You race against breast cancer will happen virtually. As a result of the ongoing coronavirus pandemic, Mercy Medical Center's annual fundraiser for breast cancer treatment won't happen in person, officials announced. Though the race was canceled once before due to hazardous weather, 2020 will be the only time since its inception that participants will not be able to physically participate. The 30th annual event is scheduled for October 11. The 2019 event saw more than 14,000 runners and walkers. The safety of our participants and our community is our top priority, race director Jeff Decker said. As a healthcare provider, Mercy has been closely monitoring the virus and following CDC guidelines to continue to limit its spread. This has been a guiding consideration as we put race plans in place. Most important, we will still be keeping true to our mission to help local individuals in need get the services they need. Proceeds will continue to go to the Especially for You Fund, which offers financial assistance to local residents for breast care and gynecological cancer services. The fund also covers breast, ovarian, uterine, cervical, vulvar, and vaginal cancer services at certain local medical providers. These are challenging times, and individuals in our community need help now more than ever, Dr. Vincent Reed, medical director at the Hall Perrin Cancer Center, said in a release. We look forward to supporting and honoring those who have fought the disease, as well as those individuals currently battling breast cancer. Team registration is open until September 15. Individual registration is available online until race day on October 11. Full pricing details can be found on the Especially for You website. Mercy Medical Center and General Mills co-founded the Especially for You race, which held its first event in 1991. And this story from Coralville: offensive comments lead to resignation. Longtime City Council member Tom Gill, whose remarks last week disparaging the Black Lives Matter movement brought rebukes from colleagues, has resigned. "If you didn't get the memo, I quit," Gill wrote Monday in an email sent from his iPhone to the city clerk. "See you down the road. Could you shut off my city email address? Thanks." The Coralville City Council website was scrubbed of his photo, email address, and biography. Gill served for a total of more than 28 years, having been on and off the council since first being appointed to an open seat in January 1987. "I am grateful for Tom Gill's contributions during the past 29 years, a time of significant growth and development in Coralville. I wish him the very best," said Mayor John Lundell. But the mayor was among those who earlier criticized statements made July 14 by Gill during a workshop session. "You're probably wondering why I've been so volatile tonight," Gill said in remarks first reported by the Iowa City Press Citizen. "It's because of BLM. And BLM, to a lot of people, is a great organization. But BLM, to me, is a bunch of criminals. And I have zero tolerance for criminals. 80% of the town doesn't give a damn about what you're talking about. They are fed up." Lundell later posted on Facebook that Gill's comments, quote, "were offensive to me and the other members of the city council. They in no way reflect the beliefs or values of the council, me, or our staff," end quote. Gill's current term began in 2018 and does not expire until December 2021. Lundell said the council will decide at an upcoming meeting how to fill the remaining year and a half of his term. This marks the second time during his tenure on the city council that Gill has quit abruptly. A little more than a year into a four-year term, Gill made the surprise announcement in 1997 that he was leaving. Quote, "I have a lot of other commitments," end quote, Gill, a dentist, said at the time. However, he was elected again in 2002 and then four times since then. Moving on to the Insight page. This guest editorial is printed from the Washington Post. Only one candidate for president has a climate plan. Even before he released his latest climate proposals, presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden was far ahead of President Donald Trump, who denies the problem and has spent 4 years dismantling the federal government's response to this century's greatest environmental threat. Mr. Biden admitted the necessity to act and had a rudimentary plan. Now Mr. Biden has fleshed out his plan. Once again, grading on a Trump curve, Mr. Biden gets an A+. Grading on a more conventional curve, Mr. Biden's proposal is serious but imperfect. Mr. Biden gets many things right. He aims to eliminate net greenhouse gas emissions from the U.S. by 2050, the year by which scientists recommend the planet stop adding heat-trapping gases to the atmosphere. To do so, he proposes transitioning the country to emissions-free electricity sources by 2035. The former vice president includes nuclear power as a potential contributor, rejecting the irrational anti-nuclear sentiment among some environmentalists. He would ramp up building and vehicle efficiency so less energy is wasted, invest in urban public transportation, upgrade the electric grid, and pump up energy research funding. The logical centerpiece of any such plan would be a policy that puts a steadily rising price on carbon dioxide emissions, such as a carbon tax, which economists have recommended for decades. Market actors would respond by switching to cleaner fuels and investing in efficiency on their own without excess government spending or central planning, prioritizing the easiest cuts while giving other sectors time to prepare. Mr. Biden nodded to carbon pricing during his primary campaign, but he proposed this past week instead a more complex web of federal spending, subsidies, and mandates. Mr. Biden appears to favor a series of sector-by-sector federal interventions. Some of these might work well, such as promoting building efficiency improvements that are likely to pay off quickly. Others, such as investing in inner-city rail infrastructure, could end up costing huge amounts for meager climate benefits. As much as possible, the government should be agnostic about how emissions are cut, leaving these decisions to private actors incentivized to avoid polluting, because they will find the most effective ways. Mr. Biden's plan all but gives up on that logic. Mr. Biden's plan would do much good and over the right time horizon. If it is not bad, just less good than it could be. That puts it miles ahead of where the nation is now. And a community letter today from Julie Eisel, or Isley, from Iowa City. Iowa House could use a law enforcement veteran. Johnson County Sheriff Lonnie Polkrebeck is retiring as sheriff and is running for the Iowa House of Representatives in District 73. This district covers Cedar and parts of Johnson and Muscatine counties, including Iowa City, Solon, West Branch, Mechanicsville, Rochester, Wilton, Durant, Loudoun, Bennett, Clarence, and Stanwood. With 35 years of law enforcement, Polkrebeck has the maturity, intelligence, and experience to work with people to solve problems in a common sense manner, not in the tired, politically divisive way we have seen far too long. He will support legislation that encourages voting rather than creating barriers to basic operations like voting by mail, legislation that was pushed and passed by the Republican-controlled legislation this past season. During the Black Lives Matter protests, Polkrebeck worked hard to keep communities safe while also trying to preserve unity. Conversely, our current representative complained on social media that more people weren't being arrested. Everyone who knows Polkrebeck knows he's a good man and an honorable law enforcement professional. He will be a great representative for the people of House District 73. Please join me in voting for Polkrebeck in November. Again, that letter signed by Judy Isley in Iowa City. You're listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today. It's Tuesday, July 21st, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, here are today's obituaries. In other notices from Anamosa, Cletus McNamara, age 93, died Saturday, July 18th. The Getch Funeral Home in Anamosa is in charge. From McGregor, Joanne Strutt, age 89, died Wednesday, July 15th. The Thornburg Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service in McGregor is in charge. In Olwine, Phyllis J. Hinkle, age 78, died Saturday, July 18th. Jameson Schmitz Funeral Home, Olwine. Also in Olwine, David Nuring, age 54, died Friday, July 17th. Jameson Schmitz Funeral Home, Olwine. From Tama, Bernadette A. Lass, age 85, died Monday, July 20th. The Cruz Phillips Funeral Home, Tama Toledo, is in charge. And also from Tama, Mark Allen Kriegel, age 70, died Tuesday, March 17th. Again, the Cruz Phillips Funeral Home in Tama Toledo. In Van Horn, Kathleen Ann Stallman Bosler, age 77, died Sunday, July 19. The Phillips Funeral Home in Keystone is assisting. In West Branch, Dorothy Janet Richards, age 68, died Saturday, July 18th. Henderson Barker Funeral Home, West Branch. In West Union, Norman Odelaine Osmondson, age 88, of West Union, formerly of Marion, died Saturday, July 18th. The Burnham Wood Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Services of West Union is in charge. In Williamsburg, Bryce Gabriel Reese, age 21, died Thursday, July 16th. The Powell Funeral Home in North English is assisting. And in other deaths, Karen L. Mueller, age 78, of Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin, died Sunday, July 19th. The Thornburg Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service of Prairie du Chien is in charge. Moving to the longer or regular notices, from Amana, Donald P. Ohl, age 86, of Amana, passed away Sunday, July 19 at Belle Plaine Specialty Care. Funeral services are at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, July 22nd at St. John's Lutheran Church, Rural Homestead, with Pastor Zachary Voss officiating. Visitation is from 4 to 6 p.m. Tuesday, July 21st at Kloster Funeral Home in Marengo. Burial will be at the main Amana Cemetery with military honors. Again, that notice is for Donald P. Ohl of Amana. From Stanwood, Virginia Eiler, age 97, passed away July 20th at Prairie Hills Assisted Living in Tipton. Visitation will be from 9 to 10 a.m. at Chapman Funeral Home in Clarence on Thursday, July 23rd. A graveside service will follow at St. John's Cemetery, Clarence, with Pastor Stephen Stepp officiating. Again, that notice for Virginia Eiler of Stanwood. In Cedar Rapids, Judith Ann Perkins, age 79, died Friday, July 17 at Mercy Medical Center. Private family memorial services will be held at the Cedar Memorial Park Chapel of Memories at a later date. Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home is in charge. Again, that notice for Judith Ann Perkins. In Waterloo, Dennis D., known as Denny Rathjen, age 68 of Waterloo, passed away Friday, July 17 at Friendship Village in Waterloo. A graveside memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, July 24 at the Marengo Cemetery with Pastor Don Dover officiating. The family will receive friends from 9:30 until service time at Kloster Funeral Home, Marengo. Memorials may be contributed in Dennis's name to the Cedar Valley Hospital or the donor's choice. And that for Dennis, known as Denny Rathjen. In Cedar Rapids, Linda K. Offerman, age 67, died Sunday, July 19th. Visitation is 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, July 23rd at the Murdoch-Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Cedar Rapids. Funeral service is at 1 p.m. Friday, July 24 at the funeral home. Entombment at the Linwood Mausoleum, Linwood Cemetery, Cedar Rapids. All guests are respectfully requested to wear a mask and practice social distancing. Again, that for Linda Offerman. Also in Cedar Rapids, Barbara Jandel, age 101, died Monday, July 20th, at the Dennis and Donna Oldorf Hospice House of Mercy. Funeral Mass will be at 10:30 a.m. Friday, July 24, at St. Ludmilla's Catholic Church, with Father Ken Glasser presiding. Burial will be in Cedar Memorial Cemetery. Visitation is from 5 to 7 Thursday, July 23rd, at the Brosh Chapel and the Ava Center, located at 2121 Bowling Street Southwest, where there will be a 5 p.m. parish vigil service. The family has requested everyone attending to wear a mask and practice social distancing. That notice for Barbara Jandel. In Hopkinton, Judith Elizabeth Sternhagen, age 72, passed away Sunday, July 19th at the Regional Medical Center in Manchester. Visitation will be from 3 to 6 p.m. Wednesday, July 22nd at Kramer Funeral Home, Monticello. A celebration of life will begin at 6 p.m. Wednesday, July 22nd at the Kramer Funeral Home in Monticello. That for Judith Elizabeth Sternhagen. In Monticello, Irie Welsh, age 85, died Saturday, July 18th at the Monticello Nursing and Rehab Center, following an extended illness. Private family services will be held Thursday morning, July 23rd, at the Getch Funeral Home, Monticello, where public visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday. Larry Lamont will officiate at the services. Interment will be in the Oak Wood Cemetery with military honors. Masks must be worn and fitted properly at all times to enter the funeral home. Social distancing needs practiced as well. That again for Irie Welsh. From Cedar Rapids, Dolores Martel Gibson, born in Monroe, Louisiana, has passed away. Homegoing services will be at 11 a.m. Wednesday, July 22nd at the Thompson Funeral Home located in Dexter Avenue, Detroit, Michigan. A live stream will be available. The Thompson Funeral Home Detroit is in charge. From Cedar Rapids, Dolores Jarbo, age 89, passed away at Hiawatha Care Center on July 19. Dolores was born in Carroll, Iowa. And online condolences may be directed to the family at iowacremation.com under obituaries. No service arrangements are listed. From Cedar Rapids, Judith Ann, known as Judy McNeil Nesper, age 82, died on Saturday, July 18th at the Hiawatha Care Center. Private family services will be held with burial at Mount Calvary Cemetery, Cedar Rapids. A public gathering in Judy's honor will be held at a later date. The Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Cedar Rapids, is assisting. Again, that notice for Judith Ann Nesper. Also in Cedar Rapids, Tracy Owens, age 47, passed away Thursday, July 9, at home. A gathering of family and friends will be at 10 a.m. to noon, Tuesday, July 28, at the New Covenant Bible Church, Cedar Rapids, with a memorial service beginning at 10 a.m. Private interment will happen at the Riverside Cemetery in Anamosa. Arrangements by Stuart Baxter Funeral and Memorial Service, Cedar Rapids. Again, that notice for Tracy Owens. From Solon, Mary K. Knight, age 65, of Iowa City, died from injuries from an accident on July 16 near her home in Iowa City. A private family funeral mass will be held Friday, July 24th at St. Thomas More Catholic Church in Coralville with Father Chuck Adam officiating. Friends are invited to be with the family at the graveside service, 12:15 Friday at St. Mary's Cemetery, 2683 Newport Road Northeast in Newport Township, and that's south of Solon. The funeral mass will be available to view via Zoom link on Mary's obituary page, Lansing Funeral and Cremation Service website. Again, that notice for Mary K. Knight of Solon. And from Cedar Rapids, Madonna Ann Hattie, age 81, died Sunday, July 19. A funeral service will be held at 10:30 a.m. Thursday, July 23rd at Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cedar Rapids, with visitation 1 hour prior to the service. Burial will follow at Mount Calvary Cemetery in Cedar Rapids. Guests are asked to wear a mask and practice social distancing. And there are several notices in the Iowa City Press Citizen. From Iowa City, Lauren Keith Hauser, age 74, died Saturday, July 18. A funeral service will be held at 2:30 p.m. Wednesday, July 22nd at Lansing Funeral and Cremation Service, Iowa City, with Pastor John Meyer officiating. Visitation will be from 1:30 to 2:30 prior to the service, with a Masonic service conducted at 2:15. Graveside services will be Thursday, July 23rd at 9:30 a.m. at Floral Hills Cemetery, Hazleton, Iowa. Again, that notice for Lauren Keith Hauser. From Iowa City, Mary Margaret Doherty, age 90, died Sunday, July 19th at her home. No services are planned. Again, that notice for Mary Margaret Doherty. Lansing Funeral and Cremation Service is in charge. And finally, from Tiffin, Herbert W. Hurley, age 81, of Tiffin, died peacefully on Saturday, July 18, at the Birdhouse Hospice Home of Johnson County. Private family funeral services will be held at 2 o'clock on Thursday, July 23, at Lansing Funeral and Cremation Service, Iowa City. Burial with military honors will be at the Fort Snelling National Cemetery in Minnesota at a later date. Please join the family at Club 76 American Legion North Liberty following the service for a time to celebrate Herb. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the Birdhouse Hospice Home of Johnson County in Iowa City. And again, that notice for Herbert W. Hurley. Moving to the sports page, lots of softball and baseball news today, so I might abbreviate a few articles to get them all in. From Iowa High School Baseball, workhorse Streff leads the Lions. Linmar's Colin Streff wants the ball in his hand. The bigger the moment, the better. It was evident when threw more than half of the Lions' postseason opener Friday and then answered the call just 3 days later with their playoff hopes on the line again. All the time, Streff said, I just want to do what's best for my team. Get the outs, get the big outs, and move on to the next game. Streff delivered a complete game two-hitter and helped lead Linmar to a 7-3 victory over Cedar Rapids, Washington in the Class 4A Substate 6 semifinal last night at Oak Ridge Middle School. The Lions, with a record of 7-8, will play second-seeded Iowa City High with a record of 10-8 for a state berth Wednesday at Mercer Park in Iowa City. And from another article in high school softball, ticket punched. Mount Vernon gets behind in the count but battles past Anamosa for a trip to state. Two strikes? You can do a lot with two strikes. You can start a game-defining rally, for instance. Nadia Teleki and Maya Bentley both recovered from an 0-2 predicament to start the game. Nicole Sullivan followed with a 3-run home run. And that ignited the 5th-ranked Mount Vernon to a 12-3 Class 3A softball regional final victory over number 8 Anamosa last night at Mount Vernon High. Our kids are good on 0-2 counts, Mustangs coach Robin Brand said. We've got 3 shots to hit the ball, and we want to take advantage of all 3. Mount Vernon, with a record of 20-4, advances to the state tournament next week at the Rogers Sports Complex in Fort Dodge for the 7th time. The Mustangs will face number 4 Humboldt with a record of 20-2 in a first-round game. They'll take a hot offense which has scored 53 times in the past 5 games. Teleki and Sullivan both drove in 4 runs. Both collected 3 hits, and both scored twice to trigger Mount Vernon's 15-hit attack. The coaches have been honest about getting quality at-bats, Sullivan said. We were seeing good pitches and working the count, even when the count wasn't in their favor. Teleki led off the bottom of the first with a double on an 0-2 count. Then Bentley turned on an 0-2 start into an 8-pitch walk. Then it was Sullivan, and then it was 3-0. It was huge, Teleki said. Just like that, it brought all of our energy to life. I just had so much adrenaline, Sullivan said. I really wanted to get to state. I hadn't been there since my 8th grade year. That was at Cedar Rapids Prairie. Her family moved to Mount Vernon last fall, and the transition appears to have been smooth. I knew she was going to blend in well, Brand said. She's been very selfless and does what's best for the team. The Mustangs extended the margin to 8-0 in the third with Teleki's 2-run single, the highlight. Caitlin Babcock, Bentley, and Sullivan added RBI hits. After being down in order in the first 3 innings, Anamosa got within 8-3 in the top of the fourth and had the bases loaded with 1 out. But Mustangs pitcher Jenna Sprague struck out the next 2 batters to avoid further damage. Mount Vernon added a single rally to the 4th and 5th innings, then the double plated 2 more in the 6th. In another Iowa high school softball story, Class 1A, return of all good for Lions. Bob Bunting has won over 1,200 games as a prep softball coach because he knows a little something about the game. Okay, more than a little something, but that didn't underestimate having good fortune every now and then, especially this season. His Lisbon Lions are headed back to the state tournament for a 3rd consecutive year, in large part due to beneficiaries of a player move-in. Make that a move back-in. Pitcher Riley Allgood threw a 3-hitter to guide her 8th-ranked
team passed number 13 Central City 4-1 last night in a Class 1A regional final. The diminutive left-handed freshman seamlessly stepped into the ace role after returning to town from Kansas City, Missouri, where she moved after fifth grade. "It was nerve-wracking to come back," she said. "I was excited to get to see all my friends again, though." Lisbon, with a record of 20-3, finished third in 1A last season, but graduated five starters, including all of its pitching. That's where Al Good's transfer back comes into play. She has a 17-2 record and lowered her earned run average here, which was a very tidy 1.73 to start the night. "I struggled from an injury a couple of weeks ago, hurt my groin muscle," Allgood said, "and it took a lot to get back from it." Three of Lisbon's four runs were of unearned variety. The Lions put the ball in play against Central City pitcher Sarah Reed, who gave up five hits and a walk. From 3A, this high school story, Williamsburg thumps a Benton. Number 3 Williamsburg made it a clean sweep over Benton Community in 2020 with an 8-1 victory last night over the Bobcats in the Class 3A Region 5 final. Six Raiders scored in the home half of the first, including senior Jill Holub, who walked, stole a base, and scored out of the fourth spot in the lineup. "Everybody is on the same page this year with the same goal," Holub said. "Every single person on the field and down the bench has been committed, and we've really helped each other get better." Williamsburg added a run in the bottom of the third before freshman Hope Moore earned the lone Benton RBI of the night by drawing a walk in the top of the fourth. That scored Elise Harvey to make it 17-1. "Our goal is to win at all," Holub said. "That's been our focus since day one. We know this is a big achievement for us, but we're not done. We want to win more, and we're not going to stop until we're satisfied." In boys baseball, this story from Class 4A, Cedar Falls eliminates West Dubuque. Cedar Falls center fielder Max Steinleg chased down a pair of warning track shots to save starting pitcher Zach Neese. Once Neese ran out of pitches, the lanky left-handed sophomore then stepped onto the mound and recorded the save. Steinleg recorded a pair of strikeouts with the bases loaded against the top of Western Dubuque's lineup to close a 4-3 victory for the Tigers last night in a Class 3A sub-state semifinal. And here's tonight's regional finals lineup. Class 5A Liberty, 17-8, is at number 2 Cedar Rapids Kennedy, 22-1. That will take place at 7 p.m. at Kennedy High School. Kennedy carries a 15-game winning streak and has been untouchable lately. The Cougars' pitching tandem of Kaylin Kinney, Jamie Sheck, and Mary Christofake has allowed one run in the last 11 games. Kinney has not given up a run, earned or otherwise, in 40 innings this season. Despite all of this, the Cougars, after their third state trip in 4 years, can't afford to look past Liberty. Number 8 Muscatine, 17-2, will be at number 5 City High, 18-4. That game is at 7 p.m. at City High. City High's bomb squad is on the doorstep of a third consecutive state appearance. Its third place finish last year was best in school history. The Little Hawks have hit homers in droves. Their 46 long balls equate to more than 2 per game. In Class 4A, Washington, with a record of 10-17, will be at number 2 West Delaware with a record of 20-4. That game is at 7 p.m. at Sill Field in Manchester. A winner of 14 consecutive games, West Delaware is a significant favorite to advance to state for the second straight year. The Hawks cruised past Cedar Rapids Xavier 12-2 in their regional semifinal, while Washington upset Clear Creek Amana 3-1. Washington entered the postseason on a 2-8 slide, but defeated Grinnell in the first round before pulling the upset of Clear Creek Amana. And lastly, number 15 West Dubuque, with a record of 11-7, will be at number 5 North Scott with a record of 15-9. That game is at 7 p.m. at North Scott High School in Eldridge. The Bobcats are a win away from their first state appearance since 2008. They'll face a North Scott outfit that has a 4A that was a four state runner-up last season. And on the Business 380 page, this note: Iowa's sales tax holiday will allow online purchases. Items must be purchased within the August 7 to 8 period. Iowans can still take advantage of the state's sales tax holiday while shopping online from their home during the COVID-19 pandemic. The, quote, holiday, end quote, will begin at 12:01 a.m. Friday, August 7, and run through midnight Saturday, August 8. Clothing and footwear that costs less than $100 are exempt from sales tax. The number of qualified items bought does not affect their exemption. Online sales are exempt if they are bought and paid for during the time period, even if items are delivered at a later date. More information for customers and businesses on exempt and taxable items can be found online. And this story on the Business 380 page: Hy-Vee is to open a Dollar Fresh store in Dyersville. More stores to come in Decorah and Olwine. 7 months after Hy-Vee acquired a former Shopko building in Dyersville, the West Des Moines company will open a smaller format store in the northeast Iowa community of 4,000. Dyersville Dollar Fresh will open July 24th at 1201 12th Avenue Southeast. The 27,620-square-foot store will carry about 9,500 items, including a full selection of grocery items. Hy-Vee spokeswoman Christina Gaiman said the store will have a bakery section, a dollar section, ready-to-eat meals, and aisles online grocery services. It also will have a DSW shoe department and Joe Fresh apparel. Quote, "We opened our first Dollar Fresh in Osceola in 2018, Gaiman said. That was originally a Hy-Vee store that we converted into a Dollar Fresh, the first one that we tried in a small community, and it has done really well." End quote. The Dyersville Dollar Fresh will have 4 full-time and 35 part-time employees, will be open from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. daily. Hy-Vee acquired 6 former Shopko locations in Iowa in January with the intention of converting them into Dollar Fresh stores. The Vinton Dollar Fresh store, which includes a full-service pharmacy, opened in late May. Gaiman said Dollar Fresh stores will be opening this fall in Olwine. A new Hy-Vee also is planned for Decorah for this autumn. "As we continue to innovate, we're taking a look at the needs of our rural communities," said Randy Ediker, Hy-Vee's chairman of the board, CEO, and president. And on a front page story from the Press Citizen, North Liberty opens a new restaurant. A look at the new restaurant called Table at 575 Cameron Way in North Liberty is the featured photo article on the front page of the Press. That brings us to the end of today's reading for the Cedar Rapids Gazette. It's today, Tuesday, July 21. I'm your reader, Kathleen Jesperson. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is Earth Date. What exactly is fossil water, and why have we consumed so much of it? No, it's not a new brand of bottled water imported from the days of dinosaurs. Fossil water came from melting ice sheets, ancient lake systems, and a generally wetter climate tens to hundreds of thousands of years ago. It percolated into porous rocks, which were then buried under deep layers of sediment, where it was sealed off from the surface, and there it stayed, until farmers discovered it. And in the second half of the 20th century, they started drilling wells into fossil aquifers and pumping like mad, turning sunny, dry places into acres and acres of green farmland. Crop supplies boomed, food became cheaper and more plentiful, grown in formerly parched places like California and Kansas, and shipped around the world for people like you and me to eat, ingesting fossil water with it. The trouble is, fossil water is a finite resource, and new studies suggest that many fossil aquifers may become depleted this century, so that we won't be able to rely on them any longer. This could mean that the crops that depend on them could become less plentiful and more expensive again. All the while, population will likely increase, the climate will likely warm, our demand for water will continue to climb, which means we'll have to adapt to the lack of fossil water, just as we adapted to its discovery, this time with more efficient crops and farming methods and more efficient use. For Earth Date, I'm Scott Tinker.
Earth Date is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more Earth Date stories at earthdate.org.